We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception, Reception, the show. Today, we are unveiling the running back position here on the site. If you go to receptionperception.com, we kind of provide the exact same kind of individual analysis, play-by-play analysis, charting that you have come to love with the wide receiver position and now the tight end position. And you know, we introduced running backs, Matt, last year, and I thought it was really, really successful. We brought it back this year, and really, really excited to talk about what's going on in regards to the running back position for Receptor Perception.
I love how you're saying we, all this we stuff. You did this.
Me personally.
You did
about the, you know, the royal we, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the royal we, Reception Perception, and Enterprises, Reception Perception Industries. What are we really? Who knows? But what I do know is that you are the one doing all of the work with the running back charting, diving into this. So I'm excited to talk about these three guys because, you know, I think it's a great, I agree with you. Like, it was super successful. People really liked it. And, this class in particular, of running backs, not the most heralded in the entire world. So I'm curious, like, just real quick before we dive into some of these three specific guys, oddly enough, the three that were drafted first, one of which was a big surprise, the last guy we'll talk about, but, just in some of the work you've done so far on this class, like, have you found it to be kind of an uninspiring group, or what do you think?
It is, mostly because I think there are more problems than there are answers for most of these guys. And I think that's probably, and again, I've done just about 10 of these collegiate dudes at some level here, not full profiles, not full charting profiles yet, but I've touched on at least 10 guys here. And I think that they, yeah, like I said, I think what I come across is that a lot of these guys have a little bit more to answer for than answers that they provide for their respective teams here. And I think that's a big reason why we saw so many of these guys go so late in the draft too. I don't think that there was a lot of, I mean, shoot, even somebody like Demond Claiborne, right, who we're going to talk about at some point here. I mean, ran a sub 4.440. And I'm not that surprised that he went that late in the draft, you know? Mm-hmm. Again, we'll get into some of his profiling stuff later. But, yeah, man, it's an interesting group. Today we're going to be talking about Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, and Kalen Black out of Indiana, who went very surprisingly in the third round to San Francisco. But I think I want to start there with Jeremiah Love because, you know, we're talking about this being somewhat of an uninspiring group of running backs. But, man, Jeremiah Love, my goodness gracious, this guy is the real deal. He goes third overall to Arizona. Incredible athlete, A-plus prospect. I mean, he's not a perfect prospect. That's what I wrote in my profile, too. He's not a perfect prospect, but golly, man, this guy is so good. I'm so excited to see what he could bring to the table.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about Jeremiah Love too. One, because I don't think this Cardinals offense on paper is as bad as other folks do. I want to get into just the, you know, Gentry versus Love as a prospect at some point here in the course of this discussion. Very curious, because I have an opinion on that, but you're probably more educated on these guys now than I certainly am. So I am curious to hear what you think on that. But I would just say, from a situation standpoint, I have seen, you know, when it comes to like fantasy analysis, dynasty analysis, stuff like that, like, oh, is this another Ashton Gentry situation where it's a running back going to a bad team? I don't think the Cardinals are going to be a good team necessarily, but I do have some degree, and obviously it's a projection. Mike LaFleur, we've never seen him run the show before, but we have seen him run an offense before. And I've said over the course of the last few years that I'm kind of higher on what LaFleur can do as an offensive play caller, maybe than others are. Again, it's a projection, but I do think that this is going to be a better situation than what we saw with the Raiders last year. I mean, I'm working on the year two charting right now for receivers. I had somebody ask me an interesting question last night. Would you rather, because I make this note, I don't make any any shy. I'm not shy about this, that sometimes when you get deep into the collegiate ranks, it's like, oh my God, another goofball offense, you know, all this stuff. I'm definitely a little bit of a snob. I'm very similar to my food tastes. I'm a snob. When it comes to offenses and things of that nature. Someone asked me, would you rather watch the 2025 Raiders offense or chart college prospects? And I was like, you know, it's a good question. Kind of depends. So I've just been charting Jack Besh for the year two stuff, and God, nice. That Raiders offense was terrible. So I'm excited to talk about. I'm excited to talk about Jeremiah Love here, because I think this is a little bit of a better situation than what we saw with Gentee last year. So to talk to me a little bit about Love, the actual player, now that I've blabbered about my kind of Cardinals, not affinity, but maybe a little bit of a weird affinity.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals would definitely be better than what the Raiders provided last year. You know, I don't know what they're going to have at quarterback, who they're going to have at quarterback, but I think they have more upside in regards to the pass catchers overall. We're talking about Marvin Harrison and all that kind of stuff, right? Like Trey McBride is in there, although that I guess the Raiders team was built somewhat similarly through the tight end. But still,
wasn't
though,
healthy for most of last year either, though. That's a big variable.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I was surprised. You know, I think there was a real clashing of heads when we're talking about how they were going to run the football there in Las Vegas, right? That's why they got rid of Chip Kelly. How did Pete Carroll want to run the ball? How did Chip want to run the ball? I thought that Pete was going to really let the reins go and just kind of let Chip take over the offense. And I think that was just not the case. Not saying that Chip is, you know, not without fault. Obviously, he is.
Of course.
But in Arizona, I think it's very clear, right? Like LaFleur is going to control the offense. And I even wrote about it in my piece. Like, yeah, am I worried about Nathaniel Hackett? Of course. of course. You have to be worried that Nathaniel Hackett is involved in the mix. But I mean, at the end of the day, you got to think that LaFleur is going to install his offense. Man, Matt, I wanted to ask you about this too, though. Like, what offense do you think we're going to see? Right, like which version of LaFleur's offense? Because if we're talking about what we saw in the most recent years for the Rams, it's going to be a lot of power stuff, duo, gap running scheme, kind of sort of up the middle, which I think fits perfectly with what Jeremiah wants to get done. But if this is more of like an outside zone type of team that, again, Sean McVay has employed at heavy doses earlier in his career, I'm not sure this is going to be a great fit for Jeremiah Love, who, again, I thought he posted really good numbers in zone, but they're not great. I thought he was much better, much stronger runner in man gap schemes and specifically between the tackles. So, which, by the way, is a little bit of a weird thing to say, because generally for these hyper athletic studs, they are crazy good at getting to the outside. I didn't quite see that. For various reasons, of which I will talk about, but I didn't quite see that with Jeremiah Love at Notre Dame.
No, I think that's interesting just in terms of the inside zone stuff. That was something that stood out to me looking through your profile here. In terms of what do I think LaFleur is going to run, now just from what I've heard and what the talk is that he was pretty – Mike LaFleur was pretty integral in the Rams – making that switch to more of a gap-based scheme. And I think he was a pretty big part of kind of installing that helping them make that transition, which they did in 2020, after the 2022 season. You know, that was when they sort of started to make that change away from there. I think that that's probably what he brings over here. And if you look at the guards that they added this year, because the Cardinals to me still have a pretty gaping hole at right tackle. That's something where, like, okay, when it was before they were going to take Jeremiah Love, it's like, oh, they're going to take Francis Maunoa because he's going to be their right tackle, the big dude. They still have that gaping hole at right tackle, but they did add two guards, Isaac Seumalo in free agency, who's a big guy. I think he can, you know, blast open some holes and gap scheme. And Chase Bisantis out of Texas A&M, he's a pretty big guy himself, 6'5", 315, does move well, so I think he can do some zone stuff as well, but he is a he looks really good when he's, you know, just going downhill. And I think if you can get him kind of pullers, anything of that stuff, I think you could see a pretty good sort of scheme there for Jeremiah Love, who I agree with you is probably going to be better as an inside runner on man gap stuff as opposed to the zone, the inside zones. He's not the most powerful guy in the world going up the middle, but I think if you can get his explosive play potential on some of those gap concepts, I think there's a lot of big plays available for him.
Yeah, according to the charting, if you're focusing on an area that he was weak, it would be inside zone, right? Like mm-hmm. he posted a 40% success rate on inside zone plays while at Notre Dame. Now, that being said, obviously a little bit of context here. He just didn't run a lot of inside zone, right? Like 4.9% of his carries came in this inside zone formation. This is, if you watch Notre Dame play, it's exclusively out of the shotgun, which I do think provides a little bit of a learning curve for Jeremiah Love too. But they're also really heavy in terms of man gap. Nearly 70% of Jeremiah Love's carries came in man gap scheme, only 30% from zone. But I would say, like, again, I just thought he was more successful running this power kind of stuff there for Notre Dame. Not saying that he can't do outside concepts, but I think my major problem with Love, and this really kind of sort of fits with, again, some of his more middling success going to the outside, Matt, is I almost wonder if he's too athletic for his own good. You know, when you watch him play, man, he got to his spot going to the outside a little bit too fast, you know? Mm. Like, I would have really loved to see a little bit more patience out of Jeremiah Love running to the outside. But, man, he's just so fast to that spot. I don't think he allows his blockers to kind of sort of set up for those cutback lanes to develop, right? And, like, when we're talking about running to the outside, that's what you need when you want to hit on some of these big time plays, right? Like, you got to stretch it to the outside, stress defenders going to the outside. And then when you see that cutback lane, you got to take it, right? And I just felt like for Jeremiah Love, it's almost like he was too athletic for his own good. I don't know if that's the case, but it kind of sort of felt that way. You know what I mean?
No, I think that makes sense. And he's not as big as this guy, because Saquon Barkley was 233 at his NFL scouting combine. Not that Jeremiah Love is a small back whatsoever, but I think Saquon is a bigger player, definitely a bigger lower body. I think when you're looking at Jeremiah Love, again, Love is a pretty big back, but still Saquon just a big dude. But I think there was a lot of similarities with Saquon as a prospect, where he was a home run hitter, but there was a little bit of, like, you know, he's going to be strikeout, single, strikeout, home run, grand slam. You know, he wasn't necessarily going to always get you a bunch of doubles, especially early in his career. And, you know, in fairness, for those who are skeptical of this Cardinals situation, I think the Giants obviously, didn't always provide him the best ecosystem in the world. And I think that sort of led to some of that. But then when, of course, he gets to Philadelphia, he's hitting a lot of home runs his first year there because of that explosive play potential. So it does feel, and obviously Saquon went second overall, Jeremiah Love goes third overall. Like, I do think that's the class of prospect he is in.
Same.
And I would say that definitely he could be one of those guys maybe early in his career where he's hitting a lot of singles and strikeouts, you know, but they're still going to hit those home runs on the occasion. So I think that's just tricky when we're talking about the Cardinals this year and what they're going to be. But do you think that's something that, like, the patience he could maybe figure out as he gets into the speed of the game?
Yeah, and I'm also hoping that his offensive line will be a little bit more athletic than they were at Notre Dame. I like Notre Dame's offensive line. Let me just make that clear. But they weren't the fastest unit in college, which is why I think that gap stuff I ended up working better for both Notre Dame backs, by the way. I know these numbers are going to be a little bit more new to our listeners and our readers, because, again, it's only the second year of running back charting. So I wanted to kind of sort of set, like, a little bit of a table set in terms of, like, what's good, what's bad, stuff like that. So when we're talking about, like, overall success rate, we want, like, prospects to kind of sort of, like, have a 55-ish% success rate on overall just all runs, right? Like, we want to have that 55% benchmark in terms of broken tackle rate, which I think is extremely important. If you want to be a good tackle breaker, you got to eclipse 28% broken tackle rate. Mm-hmm. At least according to my charting, right? Anything below that is fine. Jeremiah Love was at 26% broken tackle. So again, he's really flirting with that, like a really, really good number. But 28% is generally that kind of sort of benchmark we're looking at. And then explosive play rate. I don't call it explosive run rate, because if you catch a ball for 10 yards or more, that is, I'll just mark that as an explosive play, right? Prospect average over about 25 prospects is 17.5%. But again, I think like if you're in that 18, 19% range, I think we're pretty good. Anything over 20% explosive play rate, Matt, I think is really, really good. And that's kind of sort of like that benchmark. 20% is kind of that benchmark of like, okay, he's a good explosive player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally makes sense. And obviously, I do think that was something that you have 20% for Jeremiah Love. That's definitely something that even just watching him stands out. He is capable of being that explosive play option, home run hitter, like I mentioned. Just to go back to your point about more athletic offensive line, this is why I did like the Chase Bisontis pick, is that this guy does have some pretty decent athleticism. Again, comes out of Texas A&M. Does Chase Bisontis. He's, like I mentioned, 6'5 1/4", 315, so big player. Arm length is 68th percentile. 40-yard dash is 93rd percentile for an offensive lineman. Vertical jump is 90th percentile, again, for a guard specifically. 90th percentile vertical jump, according to Mock Draftable. 85th percentile, 3-cone drill, 7.53. And the bench press, 29 reps. I mean, for the most part, like, he's above, the only one he was below the 50th percentile in terms of athleticism was 20-yard shuttle. But otherwise, like, broad jump, 69th percentile, like, this is a guy that can get on the move. So I thought those two picks had some synergy to them. The Jeremiah Love pick going to Chase Bisontis. What they did in the third round, you know, with Carson Beck, different discussion. but those two picks together, hitting the offensive side of the football, I think that made a lot of sense for them.
Yeah, we started this conversation talking. You can't help but draw comparisons between Ashton Jeanty, and Jeremiah Love. I think I still would have Jeanty as a better prospect overall than Jeremiah Love for a couple of different reasons. I think Love is a more explosive athlete. Mm-hmm. Than Jeanty. Jinty's great, but Love is just, there's just not that many humans walking planet Earth that can post what he's posting, right? I mean, we're talking about a guy who's 212 pounds. He ran a 4.36 40. I mean, come on, man. It's just not that many dudes, man. I think Love is the more explosive athlete, but Jeanty, I think, is just the better overall running back. Like, this is a guy that can absolutely get to the outside, and when he gets there, he's a problem. He is a load. And Jeanty, all the problems that he had his rookie year were not, in my opinion, I don't think they were Jeanty related, right? Like, I don't think they were putting him in positions to succeed. He was getting hit behind the line of scrimmage a lot. And, you know, I think that's why it ended up sort of being somewhat middling. Even then, man, I thought he still had a pretty dang good season. Ashton Jeanty. But first impressions are everything, right, Matt? Like, he struggled out of the gate,
right?
And people thought that kind of sort of chased him all throughout the year. I disagree. I think he had some really, really nice moments in the middle of the year too. So I would say, from a prospect watch, like, I would have Jeanty just slightly over Jeremiah Love as a prospect.
Yeah, Ashton Jeanty's best game was against the Texans, like, late in the season. The one, probably one of, if not the best defenses they faced all year.
Right.
And Ashton Jeanty tore up that team. Specifically, he made some explosive plays in that one, which is something that was hard for him to find, which is a reminder that obviously running backs is always going to be such a product, so much more a product of their environment. Yeah. Really, really tricky. I don't know if you feel the same way. It's a tricky position to try to isolate, you know, because there's just so much going on that, like, is kind of without kind of out of their control. Obviously, that's true for wide receivers when it comes to production, but you can, and it's obviously, again, I always say it's not perfect reception perception, not perfect at isolating the players, the wide receivers even, but I think you can get a better job of that with receivers or running backs. Totally. It's just a little easier to just watch that guy run routes and everything. But that was a moment when the Raiders actually were able to give Genty some good looks against a great defense, and he was able to put up those explosive plays. With the Jeremiah Love versus Genty debate, I probably fall on the Jeremiah Love side of things. Okay. And obviously I'm not charting this as in depth as you are. I just think it's more of a philosophy. Like, I really do think it's a little bit of a philosophical and like a preference based thing. I think Genty probably is a guy that can more consistently get you doubles and triples as opposed to Jeremiah Love to keep coming back. I mean, take it from me to do a baseball analogy. That's when you know you're getting real expert stuff here. But I do think that, to come back to that analogy, I think that Genty's probably, if you like a guy that's going to keep getting you on base, doubles, triples, but maybe not as many home runs. And if you're kind of able to say, hey, I'm okay with the high variance stuff with Jeremiah Love, and I'm going to chase those home runs and the grand slams and everything, that's kind of the guy that I would prefer. But yeah, I do think that if I was to say I need 5 yards for sure, I just need 5 yards, I do think Genty might be a little bit more bankable in that regard.
The one thing that makes me lean Genty versus Love is just his feel for the game, you know, and again, it's really hard to like encapsulate that in charting, but just when you watch him play, he just hasn't a good feel for setting up blocks, pressing holes, and I think he has more lateral ability than Jeremiah Love. And Love is great. Don't get me wrong. Like, his spin move is a superpower, you know? Like, a guy that size running that fast should not be able to spin that fast. And that's his getaway move, right?
He's going to posterize people more than Genty, right? Like,
dude, totally.
Like the Saquon Barkley, hurdle, right? Like he's going to have some viral moments, whereas Genty might not necessarily have something like that.
Right. And to your point, like, again, it's just, can, if this guy can move laterally, which he does, avoid a little bit of contact and kind of sort of, you know, churn his legs forward, I think he picks up a lot of like 4 or 5 yard gains behind functional offenses. Right. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally will give you that one power run where you're like, okay, yeah, there's a reason why this guy was a top 10 pick. You know what I mean? So I would lean Genty, but I have no problem. If someone's, like you said, flavor preference is for Jeremiah Love, man, I think he's an exceptional player. It's rare, Matt, though, to see two players in the same backfield both go in the first round, and yet that's exactly what we saw. Jadarian Price went last pick in the first round to Seattle. I was really excited to get into Jadarian Price's charting because he was just such an explosive player, hit so many big plays. I actually saw online some really respected talent evaluators say that Jadarian Price may end up having a better season, at least his rookie season, than Jeremiah Love. I'm not in that camp, and for reasons I'll get into, but Jadarian Price is a really, really good player. Was so much, again, he was an explosive player getting to the outside, which is something that I really prioritize, but not so good and not so dominant running between the tackles. But going to Seattle, really interesting landing spot because, man, he's got a huge runway in front of him, considering that Zach Charbonnet recovering from a late season ACL.
Yeah, not only does Zach Charbonnet tore his ACL in the playoffs, so very late, he didn't get that thing fixed till after the Super Bowl. He didn't get surgery, I think, until like February 20th or something like that. So who knows when he's going to be available to play, you know? And other than that, it's like Emmanuel Wilson, George Halani. I've got like some deep dynasty shares of George Halani tucked away. But like... Other than that, I mean, come on, what are we talking about here? Like, Emmanuel Wilson's a guy who like popped a little bit for the Packers last year, but there's just not a lot of proven depth in the Seahawks backfield. So I think if you're making the bet of, you know, Jadarian Price could outproduce Jeremiah Love in year one, it's pretty much an opportunity and ecosystem based bet. Not to mention, we didn't talk about this with Jeremiah Love, but I was texting this with some of my Yahoo producers. Like, there's going to be true, like, self-immolation from people when, you know, Tyler Allgeier in week one vultures a touchdown from Jeremiah Love. Like,
for sure. It's happening.
Like, yeah, it is 100% happening. You know,
Steel yourself. It's happening.
Yeah. Harden your heart right now so that you don't have to go on like a Twitter rant about this. Like, you're just going to be able to see it, take it, and be like, all right, yeah. I knew this was going to happen.
Yep.
Okay. And it's just like, this is the running back position now. Okay. If you can't handle this, like, don't play fantasy football. All right.
Correct.
I said this a lot about like with Jahmyr Gibbs. I was like, if the presence of David Montgomery pisses you off as a Jahmyr Gibbs manager, find a different hobby.
Yeah, dude.
This
life ain't for you, bro.
This is not for you. All right. Yeah. Like, this is more than baked into what you signed up for. And I think, unfortunately, you're probably signing up a little bit of that for Jeremiah Love with Tyler Allgeier. So, like, there are some reasons why you could tell yourself a story about like Jadarian Price if he really, really hits. If he is really, really good outproducing Jeremiah Love in year one, I don't think it's something I would bet on. I don't think it's likely, but I get it. Just to come back to the point about multiple teammates going in the first round, this has happened not recently, but twice since the year 2000. Mm. Darren McFadden and Felix Jones went in the first round in 2008 out of Arkansas. Yeah. In 2005, Ronnie Brown went second overall and Cadillac Williams went fifth overall, both out of Auburn.
Nice.
I think that's the only time this has happened since the year 2000. So yeah, very interesting there. Man, can you imagine two running backs going in the top five from the same school?
Like, no.
No.
What?
There's a reason that was 20 years ago.
That's crazy.
There's a reason that was 20 years ago. So that's more than 20 years ago. Anyways,
yeah.
Back to these two guys. I guess our big question here, James, and this is what we need you to tell us, because like I said, situationally, you can see some ways in which Jadarian Price might outproduce a guy like Jeremiah Love in year one. But I said it comes down to how good is Jadarian Price. So how good is Jadarian Price?
He's excellent running to the outside. I thought he was fantastic getting ahead of steam and really stressing defenses going to the outside. So that's why I saw them as a really nice 1-2 combination. Like, you know, Jeremiah Love in between the tackles, Jadarian Price hitting it to the outside, like really putting defenders on skates, man, when they get out there. Jadarian Price is what I would say his like superpower is if he can get to the outside, put his foot in their ground and cut back inside, good luck.
You know?
The only problem for me though, and this isn't fully encapsulated in his charting numbers, I just thought at the point of attack, I thought he was a average, maybe even a below average tackle breaker at the point of attack. And what I mean by that is if you are trying to ask him to get to the line of scrimmage in between the tackles, I just saw way too many stab tackles where they're just stabbing at his ankles and he's going down.
Yeah. Right?
And you just can't have that at the NFL level. If you're going in between the tackles, we have to grind out, you know, 3 to 4 yards. You just got to do it. And I don't think Jadarian Price is that guy. I see him as again, home run hitter. You want to get this guy outside stretch. You want to get him outside concepts, maybe give him a toss play out there. I'd love to see, like, you know, crack tosses out there for Jadarian Price. Outside zone is going to be really interesting. I thought he scored really well on outside zone. Mm-hmm. Right? 19% of his carries were outside zone, 69% success rate, one of the best success rates that we've posted, that we've charted over, you know, 25 running backs, man. So getting to the outside, that's definitely a strength of his. Can put the foot in the ground and really get uphill. But man, just I think in between the tackles, I mean, again, this is for me, Notre Dame was clearly a better man gap blocking team than they were a zone running team or even outside man gap. But inside the tackles, when we're talking about man gap, just posted a 44.4% success rate to Jadarian Price. That's not going to get it done, man. Like, that is not good. That's well below, you know, prospect average and well below what you would like to see from typically a first round running back. So I think to me, this indicates that Seattle will continue on with the whole Kubiak outside run scheme. Can they do it with Brian Fleury? That's my major question, Matt. This is somebody in Brian Fleury that, again, has only been on the offensive side of the football professionally since 2020, right? He's never called plays. He is entering into a mantle vacated by Clint Kubiak, who is a multi-generational outside zone coach, right? So, like, can Fleury do that to that level? There's just no way. But can he do it to a level that we're comfortable with Jadarian Price? I think that is yet to be determined. And for me, I think that is a huge question mark going into 2026.
Yeah, I would be more concerned with the Fleury part of it, which I think obviously it's a fair point, right? You know, if we're talking about, like, hey, you're coming in and replacing Kubiak versus Brian Fleury, who's unproven. I would be more concerned about it if it was Brian Fleury installing that run game rather than just like, let's keep this thing going. Because he was the run game coordinator, at least in recent seasons, for the San Francisco 49ers. He was a tight ends coach. And I do kind of like the tight end coach to offensive coordinator pipeline. Now, I've been banged on this before because I thought Nick Cayley was like, as an offensive coordinator in year one for the Houston Texans. And he was somebody I was excited about because of that tight end coach to offensive coordinator pipeline. Just because, you know, you got your hands in both. Like, you really do have your hands in the pass game and in the run game. So I think that can give you some hope for Brian Fleury, obviously, because that's what they're going to do here. Like, outside zone runs is what this team is going to specialize in. Yeah, if you're a Jadarian Price bro, like you drafted this guy in your dynasty rookie draft, you're going to go ahead and log into his profile. You're going to go ahead and look at the success rate chart. You're going to block out every, like, 75% of it to the left. And just look at this right 25%, which has the outside zone green 69%.
One of the best numbers we've charted.
Yeah. You're gonna replay that line from James Coe. Go back, you know, 30 seconds in your podcast app right now and just say, okay, outside zone, one of the best we've ever charted. And that's how this guy's going to hit it over and over and over again. 100%. Yeah, I do think, again, if we're talking about him and, like, how good can he be, I agree with you. Like, I think he can be a really good outside zone runner. I think he can hit you some home runs. He can be explosive. Not in the same way that Kenneth Walker was, but he can kind of do, like, a facsimile of that type of player.
Oh, yeah.
For this team. Yeah,
for sure.
But he just doesn't, and this was Kenneth Walker's problem too, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how he marries up in Kansas City. That'll be a really fascinating discussion here. But, you know, I don't think they ever really trusted him to be that, like, grinder back, right? Like, hey, just get in there and give us the dirty work carries. He's more of that explosive play option. And, you know, based on your charting and based on just watching Price, I would say that he probably has some of those issues as well. Like, do you think he can be like that grinder type of back, or is this going to be like Jadarian Price 55% of the touches and, you know, Emmanuel Wilson 45% of the touches?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm actually excited for your George Helani shares. I think that Helani's going to come out of nowhere and end up being that guy for me.
Let me make sure I didn't cut him. Make sure, again, I don't know
where Charbonnet is at in his recovery, right? Like, he got injured in mid-January, right? Yeah. So, and again, as you mentioned, you know, didn't get his surgery to February. Like, where is he at in his recovery? I know they're optimistic, but they're always optimistic when it's early May.
Of course. You know?
But will he be back? I don't know. I don't think so. I think he'll be back, like, in the back half of the year. Where will his legs be and his cardio and conditioning be? I don't know. But that's why I'm kind of sort of excited about George Helani. I think Helani actually fits that role. Emmanuel Wilson, to me, was the guy that they were kind of have this as, like, an outside zone backup guy.
If they didn't
get somebody like Jadarian Price, right? Like, I think Helani's going to be able to bang it up the middle and get you those 3-4 yards. Jadarian Price, a little bit more of, like, your big play threat. As a matter of fact, his 26% explosive play rate was the highest that I've charted among all running backs over the last 2 years, right? So, like, this guy gets it done, you know, like, in terms of, look, I don't think he's hitting a bunch of, like, 50-yard bombs, right? But, like, 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, Jadarian Price, 26% rate, man, like, that's really, really good. And again, a 75% success rate on all outside runs, whether it's man gap or zone. That's really, really high, and a really, really good number. I just think, Matt, like, he has an opportunity to really impress if they deploy him correctly. My major concern that we have not talked about yet is, man, this guy's pass blocking is a huge
I was just red about to bring flag this up
for me. Like, can he stay on the field bad? Like, to me, again, it's limited opportunities. You know, they didn't ask him to pass protect that much, Matt. But man, when he did, he was a problem. You know, he leaves the ground, he doesn't square up. He doesn't really use his hands that much, and he just whiffs on a lot of blocks. And the major problem, he just gets fooled. His blitz recognition is not there. And again, I wrote this in my profile. I'm not expecting this guy to be, you know, Joe Thomas out there, like picking up twists and stunts and stuff, but like, he's so late on some of these blitz pickup recognitions. Like, his quarterback's getting killed, man. Like, that's why I am very concerned in regards to his pass protection and what that might bring to Seattle. Because I tell you what, man, like, Mike McDonald, he is not going to mess around with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, No. That's got to be something that they fix, and they got to fix that early for Jadarian Price.
No, you're not allowing Sam Darnold to see those ghosts again. You're gonna get Sam smoked in pass pro. You're out of here, buddy. Not to mention, by the way, this was something I talked about leading up to the Super Bowl. Zach Charbonnet gets hurt in the divisional round. This is Pro Football Focus. So, you know, some people have problems with their, you know, pass blocking charting with running backs, whatever. 11 pass block reps for George Helani in the conference championship in postseason, 4 for Kenneth Walker. So. Is George Helani on the taxi squad in the Sickos Dynasty League with our subscribers okay. and you might He's get the call okay. up. Let's call that boy up. Let's go. definitely.
That's incredible.
That is really interesting because, yeah, they did trust George Helani to do some pass blocking over Kenneth Walker, which, you know, was good coaching because that was Kenneth Walker's problem too, man. Yeah, that's why Kenneth Walker was always losing. I mean, it was not the only reason, but that was a lot of the reasons why they was losing reps to Zach Charbonnet, even though everybody and their brother knows that Kenneth Walker is the more explosive player.
Yeah.
Literally anybody with eyeballs is like, okay, Kenneth Walker is more explosive than Zach Charbonnet, but Zach Charbonnet is a little bit of a better grinder back, and he's a pass protector. And again, how much is Zach Charbonnet going to play this year? I have no idea. I wouldn't bet on like the first month. Wouldn't bet on seeing him. But
yep.
So could we see some George Helani in September? Didn't expect to talk about George Helani this much, but here we are. I just think it's real. I do think it's really, really interesting. Just to see what Jadarian Price can do, both as a pass protector and as kind of that inside grinder back. I think it's obvious he's going to have big plays as an outside zone runner. Yeah. Thought your charting back setup really shows what he is well. I think it will kind of your the one thing you said that I think is going to stick with me here is just how much of a tackle breaker can he be, Jadarian Price? Because, you know, you mentioned the numbers, you want him to be around that 28% mark, and he's just shy of that. But I talk about this a lot with college prospects. Like, for some guys, like Ted Hurst was an example of a guy like this for me, that he had these unbelievable like broken tackle numbers in reception perception, but I wasn't 100% I'm not 100% convinced that like that's going to translate to the league.
Yeah,
obviously Jadarian Price is not playing at Georgia State, so that does help. Level competition's a little bit better here. But right. You just never are sure with the broken tackle stuff, like how much that's going to cleanly translate. You do kind of have to be a little, I mean, all of this stuff you got to use your subjective judgment for sure. And definitely with broken tackles, I think that's important here.
You know, a couple of notes here before people, and again, I obviously we want people to go to the website receptionperception.com. Yes. But I would say two in terms of like really important context notes, I think, for Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love too. We didn't talk about this context of it. Man, it was crazy how many loaded boxes that these running backs face. And I'm sure you saw this with Malachi Fields. There's just not that much safety help over the top. You know, like if you're wondering why Malachi's making these bomb, like big bombing plays down the field, well, shoot, they need a threat in there because safeties were like in the box a lot. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love. Why they
had to run so many go routes, man. Get out there, these guys out of the box.
And dude, the loaded percentage here for both Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love were crazy high. As a matter of fact, the two highest that we've ever charted among any of these running backs. I mean, to the point where Jeremiah Love, 50% of his runs were against loaded boxes. That is crazy. That's crazy for him to see that and then again still be that productive. But Jadarian Price also saw a really high percentage of loaded boxes. That being said, I wrote this in my piece. I thought there was a little bit of grade inflation, though, when it came with Jadarian Price, because they put him in a lot of ugly blowouts, right? So,
that's a fair point.
Take some of his numbers with a little bit of a grain of salt. Jeremiah Love was in there mixing it up against, like, you know, some of tough defenses, and when it was like go time. You know, like when they needed plays, it wasn't Jadarian Price. It was Jeremiah Love. So there's a little bit of grade inflation when it comes to Jadarian Price, but not a ton. But still, I thought that's at least important to bring up when we're taking a look at some of these success rates.
Sure. No, I think that's a good point. And always tricky when you're going to talk about running backs being in there in those sort of situations. So, yeah, I think Price, really interesting pick. I don't know where you've come down on him, just like, again, projecting opportunity in year one. I think, obviously, again, we've really talked about this guy in depth, I think, and I think given people the sort of range of outcomes here for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just an interesting player because the Seahawks took him aggressively in the first round.
Yeah, that was aggressive.
But at the same time, like, they tried to trade out of that pick so hard, too. Everybody knew they were trying to trade
That's
out.
Good point.
Everybody knew they were trying to trade out. So, while, yeah, sure, they viewed Jadarian Price as a first rounder, they were also kind of content, like, well, if we lose out on Jadarian Price, yeah, whatever. Exactly. So it's a little bit of a... They're committed to it, and he does strike me a little bit as a Seahawks back. I mean, John Schneider has said he loves to scout the running back position, and he definitely has a type. He loves these, like, explosive play. He's like me. He's going to be like, all right, well, strike out, that's fine, but we'll hit some home runs. Whether it's Rashad Penny, Kristen Michael, I remember CJ Procise, these guys. I mean, Kenneth Walker. I mean, yeah, big backs with some explosiveness. So that's definitely what they're looking for with Jadarian Price. But I think the big thing for him is going to come down to, like, how many can he be a grinder back, the pass protection, and how much is our buddy George Halani going to play?
There is, again, he was a little bit of a reach. Not a huge reach, but a little bit of a reach was Jadarian Price. There is no question the biggest running back reach in the entire draft was in the third round when San Francisco selected Kalen Black out of Indiana, who, again, you could make the argument that Roman Hemby was more important to the Indiana's backfield than Black was, but Black goes in the third round, and it's funny, Matt, like, this was the pick that I think broke the camel's back, like the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, like, this is when everyone started bringing up, like, the receipts of San Francisco's third round picks, of their running back picks, and then it became consensus big board, and the entire internet could not stop talking about the damn consensus big board. But it was, I think this pick, 90th overall, third round by San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan and company picking Kalen Black out of Indiana, shocking a lot of the folks, again, who follow this thing professionally.
Well, and the funny thing about it, too, is that, yes, it was shocking because, obviously, again, it wasn't a consensus pick. Of course, we know that. like you mentioned, we weren't even sure if he would be the first Indiana back off the board. People did not have him in this range. That being said, it's also not that shocking because the 49ers do this every year specifically
every year.
At this position. Forget like, oh, they reach versus the consensus board and their drivers, whatever. They also do this every single year. They do this every year at the running back position. Brett Coleman had this tweet after the NFL draft. Shanahan and Lynch have taken 5 mid-round running backs. I believe this is rounds 3, rounds 4. 5 mid-round running backs before doing it yet again this year with Kalen Black. Joe Williams, Trey Sermon, Tyrion Davis Price, wow. Isaac Garendo, Jordan James. Out of those five picks, none of them have eclipsed 500 career yards as a San Francisco 49er. Zero of them. Crazy. I mean, I don't know that any of these guys made it through. I mean, Joe Williams, Trey Sermon, TDP, all those guys were cut on their rookie contracts or traded or whatever. Garendo, he looking like he's going to be cut on his rookie contract. Yep. I mean,
Garendo's the only guy, literally the only guy I was excited about of that group because he's just a phenomenal athlete, like 99th percentile athlete. He was the only one. And even then, he couldn't stay healthy.
He couldn't stay healthy and... I don't know. I mean, he just like disappeared off the face of the earth. He had a couple of interesting moments, in 24? And then last year,
gone. Yep.
Just like that, he was gone. So yeah, we'll see with Kalen Black. We'll see if he can be any different.
Look, this is a player that if you just look at the charts, you're like, yep, San Francisco hit a home run.
I was going to say, like, I opened up his profile and I was like, oh, there's a lot of, I mean, I did the thing that I hate when people do with my charts, like, ooh, a lot of green here.
A lot of green.
Let me do the color. Yeah, we're doing the coloring book analysis. Hey, a lot of green.
There is a lot of green. There's no question. Again, there's four. When you look at the charts, right? Like there's four quadrants, you know, like we split it in half. Half is man gap. The other half is zone. And then those are split up in half again. It's inside and then outside, right? Mm-hmm. So there's four quadrants. And Kalen Black is green in three of the four quadrants. And you're saying to yourself, wait, hold on. San Francisco, they must have like known. They use their big brain here. They big brain this thing and they found a guy in the third round that is way better than what consensus would tell you he is. And when I'm charting Kalen Black, I cannot tell you how like monotonous it was because every rep, Matt, is the damn same. It was shotgun formation. It's man gap. It's between the tackles, right? Black somehow, some way finds the requisite gap and then he falls forward. He picks up 4, maybe 5 yards and I'm giving him a positive play on that result because again, he did enough to have a positive impact on a run play. Like he moved the pile. Maybe he maybe burrowed his way in. Like, it's just every rep was like this. It was so, I wrote this in my profile. Dude, it was so repetitive that when I finally saw him crack a big play against Oregon in the college football playoffs, I legitimately threw my hands in the air and was like, yes, thank you, Lord Jesus. This is amazing. Thank you for giving me a different play. Thank you for giving me a big play. As a matter of fact, 65-yard run against Oregon in the CFP, bro. Like, he looked awesome there. And I will say, peak Kalen Black was in the Natty. Like, he looked his absolute peak form in the Natty against Miami. And you cannot convince me that is the game that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch started with when evaluating Kalen Black. There's just no way.
Well, did you see this was a big kerfuffle on the internet? And I think it's misplaced. But did you see that like Shanahan went a little viral from a clip on the Rich Eisen show where he was talking about how he relies on he doesn't watch prospect tape until February, which if you listen to our show, you knew this is why Dazon Stribling was going to be a late riser because we talked. This is why he was a late riser. We talked about this. Coaches don't get involved in the draft process until you're like, oh, my God, he's not watching tape until February. I'm like, yeah, he's kind of doing some shit before February called coaching a playoff team. instead of preparing for games in week, 15, he's like, let me pop on some college tape. Yeah. It's not how this works, folks.
No.
So he said that's what the scouting department is doing. And then he relies on the position coaches to put together a highlight tape of each prospect. And again, I think people saw that and they're like, oh, he's going to YouTube and searching. No, That's, again, it's a cut up of like, okay, give me like a cut up of their best plays, which now with technology, I'm sure the position coaches can do like that. Exactly. You know, just again, I didn't think this was like nearly as controversial as it was made out to be based on people not, and to no fault of most people, to no fault of your own. Like, it's just, you don't, this is, people don't know how this works, like, which is fine. Cause you have a real life. You're not thinking about how do coaches scout prospects. So this is pretty standard operating procedure for these coaches, but it is just kind of funny. You mentioned the highlight tape. I bet you there was a lot of that Oregon game, a lot of national championship game. That was the cut up. That was the highlight tape cut up that Shanahan was watching. He's like, All right, I'm watching that, and then I'm gonna watch more. Right, that's what he said. If it's like, if I don't like their highlight tape, I'm not gonna watch anything after that. So if you can't impress me at your best, what's the point? And again, I'm not here to defend the 49ers draft record, okay? But I'm just saying that's pretty normal operating procedure. And I will say, like, reading your profile about him, Kalen Black, you literally said in the profile, like, if exactly what I thought when they took this guy, if the Niners really wanted a grinder that could churn out solid gains and nothing more, they got their guy in Black.
Yeah.
And doesn't that kind of feel like what they need? Doesn't it kind of feel like that's what Christian McCaffrey has needed for the last few years in San Francisco? Like, just a guy to take some of the grinder carries off of his plate. Christian McCaffrey last year, you know, regular season, postseason combined, 480 opportunities, targets plus rush attempts.
Oh, that is a typical CMC season.
That is the fourth most for a running back since the year 2000.
Amazing.
The three ahead of him and Arian Foster, Jesus, who he's tied with for fourth. DeMarco Murray in 2014, holy shit, 506.
Wow.
Saquon Barkley in 2024, 494. Obviously, they went to the Super Bowl. Eddie George in 2000, 489. So it's just like, and the other guys after CMC on this list, Larry Johnson in 2006, Edgerrin James in 2000, Amon Green in 2003, LaDainian Tomlinson in 2002, Curtis Martin 2004. Like, we don't get back to our era of the NFL until Le'Veon Bell and Zeke Elliott in 17 and 18 with 456 and 455. So it's just like, that is an abnormal amount of work that this guy had last year. I asked him about this at the Super Bowl. He had a very, very telling quote to me, not to me, but this, in my opinion, this was telling. He called this the hardest season of his life last year. Wow. And some of it was, and again, I asked him, like, can I pull on that thread for a second? So I asked him about this, and it was not just like football. It was also like, he had a kid, you know, personal life stuff. Like, okay. So, you know, you're having a kid, you're up at night with the kid, and you're dealing with 480 opportunities on game day. Like, that's a tired man. And he does a lot to take care of his body.
For sure.
But there is, I will say this right now, there is a 0% chance they can do that to him again. Zero, if they want him to stay healthy, zero. So maybe the thought with Kalen Black is, yeah, look, this guy is probably not like our next star running back after the McCaffrey era.
Yeah.
But as we're trying to win some games in 2026, can this guy just hit us a single when we get him, like, get us a positive gain when we have to put him in there for the grinder carries to get Christian out of that stuff so he's not toast by week 10? I don't know.
Maybe I don't know.
Thought process.
I like the thought of it. Of course, I like the thought of it. And first of all, if you don't know what the curse of 370 is, go Google that. So that will be something to watch for in regards to Christian McCaffrey. It's not looking great, I don't think, for CMC in 2026. And
is the curse of that's carries? Is it carries or touches?
It's touches.
Okay. Well,
total touches.
He soared past that because he had 311 carries. So yeah,
and
he soared past that.
And so yeah, and so, and by the way, like, in recent history, like, that has definitely proven itself to be true. Like, curse of 370. Like, we're talking about, like, CMC himself was a victim of it. Like, he got hurt the next year. Yeah. Derrick Henry, it's happened to him two times. And both times he saw a huge, he either got injured or saw a huge production dip in efficiency overall. Right. So like, CMC's in trouble for 2026 because of the incredible workload and the age, right? The age cliff that he's approaching here. So that he's just on high alert for 2026.
He turns 30 in June in just over a month, June 7th. Yeah, he turns 30. My conversation with him at the Super Bowl, like I said, I think that's a guy that's thinking about, like, am I hosting a podcast with Matt Harmon in 2 years, which I would love to do. I would love to do that. But no, I mean, and I think he'll have higher opportunities than hosting a damn podcast with me. A guy that's maybe thinking about post-football a little bit.
You would think so. He's definitely on the back nine of his career. He's got a couple years left before he's got to move on, you know? So, I just think, San Francisco needs to incorporate a second back. The only problem is, and I'll ask you this, Matt, like, do you think Kyle Shanahan has it in him to do that? I don't. Like, he's never shown an ability to ease the workload off of his favorite players. Like, these guys go out there until they're ground into dust.
Especially McCaffrey, because you know what? McCaffrey, and not just the, frankly, like, their run game was not all that efficient last year. He was not that efficient as a rusher, McCaffrey, but he's dynamite as a pass catcher. And to me, that is still, that is the reason that Shanahan can't quit the cigarettes. Like McCaffrey and not even just what he does with the ball in his hands, but the gravitational pull of him being out there and how he brings that scheme to life. Shanahan will never be able to quit the cigs. Okay. Because that that being said, let me really galaxy brain a take here.
Okay.
Maybe
bring it. Let's do it.
All right. Maybe because this Kalen Black thing, maybe they almost knew it was going to be such a lightning rod because of the reach. Uh-huh. And because he does fit this like grinder mold, maybe in order for Shanahan to be able to quit his addiction to just hammering McCaffrey with touches, they're like, we got to give him. And they got him in on this. Like, they're not trying to pull a wool over his eyes. He's in on this too. We got to give him a reason to quit. And the reason is prove everybody wrong, right?
Okay. I like this take.
The one thing he might be able to be more like more motivated than bringing his scheme to life, bringing his scheme to a new level with McCaffrey, which again has been the greatest fulfillment of his coaching life. Like having McCaffrey take his scheme to a whole new level, because who wouldn't love that? Maybe the only thing that he might love more than that is proving everybody wrong about this Kalen Black thing. So they're going to make – this is the one they're like, no, we're going to make this work. We're not doing the, okay, Raheem Mostert's playing over Trey Sermon, or we're cutting these guys. No. They're gonna make this Kalen Black thing work. And listen, even if he's just giving them truly 4.0 yards per carry, not a point over, 4.0, that's it. They're going to give him the football and lighten the McCaffrey load in order to preserve McCaffrey and save Shanahan from himself. That's my theory. That's my galaxy. Oh my God.
First, I love that theory, man. And I want to believe in it. Look, I know we're kind of sort of like dismissing the Kalen Black pick, but let me just say, like, there were obviously some really like really, really strong charting numbers, right? Like he posted a 76% outside run success rate. Right, like that is really good. It's the third highest of any player I've charted over the past two seasons, just outside of like guys like Ashton Jeanty and RJ Harvey. Like, come on, bro. Like, this is the company that he's keeping in Kalen Black running to the outside. I bring that up, Matt, because I know there's been some made of the fact that, you know, Shanahan used to be exclusively an outside zone guy. He's obviously incorporated a lot more man gap stuff because with the arrival of Christian McCaffrey really likes running a lot more man gap, going all the way back to his Stanford days. But that being said, it's still, you know, I would say it's like a 50-50 man gap zone team. But a non-negotiable for San Francisco is, man, they're going to run to the outside. Yeah. They got to run it to the outside. They were still a heavy, you know, outside run rate team last year. I believe they were top 10. Don't have the numbers in front of me, but somewhere in the top 10, right? Like in terms of outside run rate. So they got to get to the outside. I think for me, forget about zone or man gap, Kalen Black or whatever running back is going to be successful in San Francisco, they have to run to the outside. The other thing that I will say is those non-McCaffrey runs to running backs, those are heavily zone influenced, right? So can Kalen Black run to the outside and can he run zone? I'm not 100% sure because only 11% of his carries came in zone. So that's kind of sort of a big question mark, but does he have the tools? Yeah, 76% outside run success rate? Yeah, for sure. Like those are tools that I think he can bring to the table into the Shanahan system and maybe perhaps give them a little something there at the running back position. Okay, now that being said, his pro day measurements were actually better than I was anticipating, right? He's 5'9", 208 pounds. He ran a 4.45 at his pro day. These numbers are usually generally a little bit more nicer.
Generous.
A little more generous than at the combine. But still, 4.45 is really good. And he posted a 37.5-inch vertical, which I thought was, again, an extremely strong number. So there's something here, man. There is something here. I'm not going to say I didn't like the pick. It didn't make sense. It was they could have had him in. If you want to take him in the fourth round, maybe I could see it. But this is a classic fifth round draft pick. They took him in the third round. But that being said, there is something there.
Yeah.
If there's a area where I'm like, I can't believe they took him there, it's because he didn't break a lot of tackles and he just is not that explosive. Like a 13% explosive play rate, that just does not get the job done, right? Again, we're talking about guys being over 25%. We want them to be like, you know, 20% at the explosive play rate. He's at 13%. That's just, again, a below average number, well below prospect average, and we just need to see more in terms of explosiveness from Kalen Black, which is why it was curious that they took him that early.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair. And I think if we're, well, number one, third most carries on outside zone last year, the San Francisco 49ers, behind only the Atlanta Falcons, just that's like all they run. That's all they run, and then Chicago, and then San Francisco. So yeah, I definitely think he's gonna have to be as efficient or in that neighborhood as he was in your charting, just on higher volume there. But yeah, I feel like honestly, reading through your profile, talking with you about Kalen Black, I think you feel pretty similarly as I do, maybe a little lesser degree as I do with the Stribling pick for them, which was like, there's something here. I like the player. The charting shows you some good stuff. You know, make me defend him as a third rounder as opposed to the third, or like a late second rounder as opposed to the 33rd overall pick for Kalen Black. Like, make me defend him as a fifth rounder or a late fourth rounder as opposed to a third round draft pick, you know? So like, that's the thing. This comes back to your culture war stuff about the consensus board, is that it's just, okay, like we can agree that he's probably, and some people won't let you agree to this, but like, we can agree that they took Kalen Black
too soon.
Yep. And they took Stribling way ahead of consensus, ahead of Denzel Boston, you know, which I wouldn't have done, and probably at the beginning of the round, where I would have preferred him at the end of the round.
Yeah.
Okay. But that doesn't mean these guys are completely worthless. I think we overcorrect. Right. Like they've got a path to being good players. They just went earlier than expected. And it doesn't have to be this one extreme or the other. I do think it's funny. And I'm going to get this off my chest here, cause I haven't said it anywhere else. It's not interesting, so don't worry, but it is so funny. And again, this is the strip. It's true of Kalen Black. It's definitely true of DeJuan Stribling, which I don't know how, like, I've just seen 1,000 tweets about DeJuan Stribling since they took him.
It's so crazy.
Like, I almost feel bad for the guy in a way, but isn't it so funny that all these 49ers writers that have just like, and accounts have gone to the mat to defend DeJuan Stribling. Dude. If he'd gone to 31 other teams, you never would think about him. You never would talk about him. But now it's like, your identity is, I am defending DeJuan Stribling. And I say, this is somebody that really likes Stribling pre-draft.
Yeah.
It's just funny how that works. I don't have any interesting like take there. It's just so funny to think, like, how many times do you think, insert this random 49ers account you know, has tweeted about Kalen Black or Dejounte Dribbling and since the draft ended a couple weeks ago. And you know how many times, like in a different multiverse where they went to 31 of the other 32 NFL teams, they never would be about zero, again. Zero. Yeah. Maybe actually, honestly, probably get like one joke off and then that's it.
So content done.
I think the moral of the story is, I think you probably feel the same way again about as I do about the Dribbling thing, which is like, there's something to this guy. Like, I don't think he's totally worthless. And in fact, I actually kind of like him a little, like the charting said, probably like him a little bit, but just they put you in a position where it's like, don't make me defend this.
Yeah, can't do it in the third round, man.
But Kalen Black's an interesting player. Again, he broke my brain a little bit in terms of how effective he was on a down by down basis. But just I just don't see any upside with the pick at all. You know, he just doesn't exhibit those traits. But yeah, down by down, man, grind that thing out 100%. Like it's something. But
you're going to get full. It's not going to be the best meal you've ever eaten in your life, but you are going to get full.
A lot of MREs over here, you know, with Kalen Black, you know what I mean? But, I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, so there you go. Three running back profiles on the site. There's going to be a lot more coming, as well. I'm planning to write at least another six. We'll see if we get there. Six more profiles, from the collegiate side, and then, you know, try to hit 25, 30, of these NFL guys too before the season starts. So, we'll get it going. But again, if you guys would go check it out, receptionperception.com for the latest on the running back side, in the RP universe, man. This is pretty cool stuff. Don't you think, man? Like we've got Alfredo Brown talking about quarterbacks. We've got our guy Max Toscano talking about tight ends. You're obviously the king of wide receivers. And then we throw in the running back position, man. We got them all covered here on the offensive side. This is pretty good.
I don't know about the king, but I definitely spend more time thinking about this than maybe any other human being on earth. So I don't know what that makes me. Probably not royalty, but I'll take something in that regard. Yeah, no, it's cool. We got a great group, people in front and behind the scenes. So yeah, no better time to get yourself a reception perception subscription than right now. I mean, shoot, there's just so much on the site. I think people really, really love.
I love it. All right, so there you go. That's your show. We ran just a little bit long, but again, we're introducing running backs here. It's all good. Anyways, we'll be back next week. We appreciate y'all, but remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.